Anthony D. Williams is the co-author, along with Don Tapscott, of the best-selling Wikinomics. Wikinomics was the first introduction for many to the world of Web 2.0. Williams spoke at a tech event at CASE in May on Wikinomics and the future of education. It's fascinating to see Web 2.0 brought into a variety of disciplines, such as education. When CASE Dean Barbara Snyder spoke, she commented on the broadcasting of the event in Second Life, joking, "If I'm an avatar, I want final approval." In this interview, I asked him a couple of the nagging questions about Web 2.0.
Coming to you from the world-renowned Magnum Building on beautiful Payne Avenue in the heart of Cleveland, Ohio, it's the entrepreneur himself, Dan Hansen, bringing you the Great Lakes Geek Show.
We're speaking with Anthony Williams, the co-author of Wikinomics. The Web 2.0 world, it's the age of participation. How do you balance the due diligence of traditional journalism and the accountability question of open source?
Well, I don't think the traditional models don't necessarily disappear, but increasingly I think you've got a variety of different ways in which you can authenticate and verify information. Some of it will be based on the reputation of individual contributors as judged by their peers and the quality of their edits. I think that Wikipedia is a good example of that. So right now anybody can edit and it's not clear what the reputation or quality of the edits might be in some cases, but if you were to build in a reputation system into Wikipedia where individual contributors, as judged by their peers and other people in the community, establish a reputation for making quality edits, and perhaps, that would give some way to evaluate the actual content and individual entries on Wikipedia. So you can start to at least imagine, much in the way that you have peer review in scientific journals, that you could have a much more open peer-reviewed system for, verifying and authenticating, various content. It doesn't mean that, to the traditional journalism will disappear, or that, those credentials that people have will be irrelevant in the future. I just think we'll have a different span of or a variety of different opportunities and models for doing that kind of work.
The other big balancing question is always convenience versus privacy. We all want to be, when we're walking past Starbucks, maybe get a coupon on our phone for a cup of coffee, but do we really want people to know we're by Starbucks? How do you address
that? I think the key there is to put users in control of their data and their privacy as much as possible. So they have control over, if they're going to share their location awareness with their friends, that's fine, but they don't want to share their location awareness, with companies or marketers and advertisers and so forth. And the key, again, is just simply to provide the users with the options and the control, and don't, force them to do things that they're not personally comfortable with. One thing that we have seen as a good example, that people speak about this youth generation and they have different notions of privacy. I think to some degree that's true. They have a slightly more open philosophy when it comes to sharing their personal data and stuff about their personal lives, but that is, I think, exists within a set of parameters. For instance, when people of all ages all of a sudden could join Facebook, there was a bit of a counter movement among many young people that said, well, hey, I didn't agree to share my data with my parents or their friends and so forth. I just, I enjoy sharing my data and stuff I'm up to with my friends. That's how I define my privacy. I'm open with my friends, but it only extends so far. So I think, Facebook has responded to that and now, provides options for individuals to decide, that I'm going to share this category of information with this category of friends and so forth, and I've got much more control now to be much more specific about who I share data with. So that, I think, at the end of the day, is how you reconcile those two polar opposites there. The one hand, the desire for some privacy, and the other hand, the desire to be open and share and take advantage of some of the new technologies that exist.
And finally, in this global economy, if you look at the bandwidth speeds that we get in the U.S., it's pretty pathetic compared to some countries, Japan, Korea, Europe. Why is that, and is it holding us back in the global economy?
Well, I think to answer the second part of the question, I think, it potentially could be a source of national disadvantage, if you will, in the marketplace, for individuals, because I think, increasingly access to, high-speed networks and all of the content and capabilities that enables is increasingly important. The reason is, I think that Japan and Korea are further ahead is because there's been more, frankly, more public investment in building the infrastructure. Here, you know, in the United States, the model has been somewhat differently. It, you know, it's been left up to the private sector to provide, you know, all of the infrastructure. And in some cases, I think there is a role for more public investment in some of those infrastructures. I think, you know, the other thing is you could look at the, you know, the regulation of the telecommunications industry, and you could ask questions about whether there's enough competition in the marketplace to drive the kind of investment that we need. So, you know, those are all complex questions for sure, but certainly, you know, from my point of view, broadband capacity is essential to competitiveness and therefore worthy of public investment.
We've been speaking with Anthony Williams of New Paradigm, also the co-author of Wikinomics. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Great Lakes Geek Show. Come back soon at www.greatlakesgeek.com.